Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. I'm just back from holidays in Saskatchewan, and while I only saw maybe a couple fields in swath when we were on the road, it looks like the harvest season is just about upon us. Whether your combines are or aren't ready for the job, well, you're about to find out if you haven't already. Scott Garvey is the machinery editor for Grain News and Country Guide, and he's got the cover story in the most recent issue of Grain News about getting your combine to be all it can be. Scott, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Good to be here, Dave.
Now, the headline of your story is a pretty definitive warning about combines. Don't just set it and forget it. The typical prairie grower, though, the person who may or may not be listening to this show, how likely is he or she to set it and forget it these days? Because it sure seems like there's a lot at stake.
Well, there is a lot at stake, but so many growers feel they're under a time crunch, and they are under a time crunch, and so the temptation is to get in the cab and put the pedal to the metal and let it go. And I actually recall a conversation with one young producer who said, well, I never have to worry about my combine settings because my loss monitor just tells me whether I'm losing grain or not. But that kind of highlights a problem. A lot of people misunderstand what the loss monitor is actually telling them. And the only way you're going to know whether your combine is performing up to snuff or not is to actually look, test, and see what's coming out the back.
Mm-hmm. Now, your featured expert in this article, Joel McDonald from the Prairie Ag Machinery Institute, or PAMI, he has an interesting quote he uses about combines. He says here, a combine's a highly complex factory with continually changing feedstock.
Well, and that's a really good way to put it, because probably no more complex piece of machinery on the farm than the combine. But unlike an industrial factory where the same material is coming through at the same rate all the time, in the field, the crop conditions vary from field to field and even from location to location within a field.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, crop conditions vary. Weather sure as heck varies. So the factory floor's got to keep up with the changes. So there's no single list of optimum settings that'll do the job. But where's a good place for a person to start?
Well, in that presentation, Joel said that there really isn't a magic setting. Basically, he suggests that dealer or farmers consider throughput in terms of bushels per hour, rather than what a lot of producers think of first is how fast should I go? Because the speed, of course, has more or less influence on the performance of the combine based on how thick the crop is going through. So if you keep that idea in mind of I'm combining so many bushels per hour, that's basically your starting point, is to think of your combine performing to that standard rather than how fast it's going.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there's finding the balance between keeping it slow and, you know, between keeping it slow and steady and actually getting the job done.
Right. If you think of combine performance as an inverted bell curve, too little material going through the machine increases your loss, as does too much material going through, which carries out a lot of the seed with it. So at the bottom of that bell curve is kind of your sweet spot in terms of loss. You're never going to eliminate all loss, but you want to be somewhere down in the bottom so you're putting as much of that grain in the tank as you can.
Mm-hmm. And with that too, there's also the question of header height. Granted, you're bringing it, bringing some other material through the combine is going to be inevitable, but if you're setting your header higher, are you going to realistically get more?
Right, and it's that MOG, or that which is an acronym for material other than grain, that really influences how well your combine will perform. Too much MOG and it just carries out the grain with it, because the cleaning system simply can't separate it efficiently. So if you raise your header height up, cut a little higher, you've got less MOG going through the combine, less junk, less straw, less chaff, or less straw at least, and that will improve the capacity of your combine. Of course, it does create maybe other considerations later on. If you have a very high stubble, then you may need to think of some sort of tillage pass across the field to prepare for next spring. But everything in harvest seems to be a trade-off.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned loss monitors before. You know, that brings us back to grain loss and how best to measure it. You know, I mean, are loss monitors something that really should be relied on to the extent that some farmers seem to do?
No, a loss monitor is something you really need to understand well, and you need to actually measure the loss that your combine has and relate that to what your loss monitor is reading in order to fully understand what that loss monitor is telling you. And in that presentation with Joel, he also mentioned that increasing sort of lights or bar graph, whatever style of loss monitor you have, isn't necessarily incremental. A slight move up, a slightly higher indication on your loss monitor can mean a significantly increased amount of grain going out the back. So you really need to understand what your loss monitor is telling you and understand that there are ways that if your fan speed, for example, is too high and you're blowing kernels over top of the sensor in the back, you could be losing a lot of grain and your loss monitor doesn't know it. So it's not to the strict information standard that we might expect from our laptop on other things that we do. So you really need to understand your loss monitor.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned fan speed as well. Is that what do producers need to keep in mind there?
Fan speed is pretty critical because you want your fan speed to be set so that you're blowing all the chaff and light material out, but you're allowing the kernels of grain to settle. And of course, with wheat or barley or grain with a heavier crop, there's a larger difference between the weight of a kernel and the weight of the chaff. So you can have a little bit of play there where you can fudge it a little bit so that you're still not losing your kernels, but you're blowing the chaff out because there's such a difference in weight. So that's not as big a problem in large seeded crops like that. But if you go to, say, canola, where the kernels are so small and light, you don't have much difference in the terms of weight between your chaff and your kernels as to how easily they blow out of the combine. So you have to be much more precise in setting your fan speed in a crop like canola than you would in wheat or barley.
Now, lastly, with newer combines, is there less of a margin of error on your decisions? I get that there's running too slow, but with the scale and power of some of these machines too, are you more likely to plug badly if you're running your machine too fast these days?
Well, that plugging sound is the sickening sound that so many producers have heard that just sends a shudder up your spine thinking about it. A lot of crops these days, and including even a lot of canola now, are being straight cut. So you're getting a much more consistent feed up the feeder house. But if you're running on the edge, kind of on the upward swing of that bell curve where you've got a lot of mog going through your combine, mm-hmm. and you do put a slug through it, then yeah, you are at risk. It won't take much to hear that sickening sound again. But the good part is on a lot of combines now, unplugging is a lot simpler than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely some food and feed for thought going into the harvest. Scott, thanks again for your time and wisdom as always.
My pleasure.
Scott Garvey is the machinery editor for Grain News and Country Guide. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. So farmers in eastern Canada are also wondering after a wildly variable year whether their crops will be fully matured before fall frost arrives. This year, as in years past, a number of crop surveyors will be fanning out through Agricultural Quebec in what's called La Tournée des Grandes Cultures, or the Field Crop Tour. This year, the tour is expected to involve about 60 crop surveyors traveling through the Montérégie, Centre du Québec, and Rive-Nord regions in a single day, August 20th. Today, we're talking to one of the partners/participants who's been involved with the crop tour from the get-go. Dante Manicchio is a merchandising manager with Richardson International in the Montreal area, and he joins us now. Mr. Manicchio, welcome to Between the Rows.
Good morning, Dave.
Now, first, let's talk about the Tournée des Grandes Cultures itself. I gather this has been going on since 2014?
Yes, correct.
And now, why was this event originally organized?
Well, I think originally, Dave, what we were looking at is organizing a tour to collect data and information on crop progresses in Quebec, and also to get a very good idea by collecting data in creating a crop tour, which we could gather this data to give us a very good snapshot and idea of what the outcome of the upcoming corn and soybean crops in Quebec were going to be. That would be more of an estimate, no different than what we see in other crop tours, various crop tours across North America.
Is there a shortage of this kind of data in Quebec generally, or...?
Yes, well, that was one of the things. I think there's been, I wouldn't say a shortage of data, but it seemed like things were done more on an individual base, on a regionalized base, and it wasn't necessarily publicized or given out as common knowledge to the farmers or to members of industry. So the whole scope of this project was to do a general crop tour in which we can get participants involved, whether from the feed or end user industry, as well as farmers, to collect this data and share it on a general scope. So that way it would be a more generalized consensus of this crop tour. That was the idea right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Since the La Tournée got started, are there of other crop tours of this kind also sort of popped up in Quebec, or is this still the main one?
So far, so good. From my knowledge, this is the main one that covers the type of area and kilometers from the various regions. So I would say of this nature and size, with the exception of probably some government crop surveying, this is the general one from the industry and sector.
Mm-hmm. Now, this year, the tour is being handled somewhat differently. You've had participants in the field since the beginning of the season, filling out weekly surveys on corn and soybean development in their areas. And they're also publishing the results on grainwiz.com. Why did the organizers decide to add that element this year?
Well, I think there's two levels of why we wanted to add this. One, it was to continue to collect data, but throughout the growing season, to see the different stages of development in both the corn and soybeans throughout the growing season, to give more data, more access to where are we at with our crops here in Quebec? What stage are they at? Are they in good shape? It's somewhat of a crop progress report that's given out with all the data that's collected from the various participants that fill out the weekly survey. So that was the first one. And the second one was to add a more promotional basis to the tour throughout the growing season. So that way people would hear more and more of it. So that way we could add more exposure, if you want, to attract more farmer participation and more industry participants. So there was two levels of why we wanted to go ahead with this year.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of additional exposure, once the single-day crop yield tour is completed on August 20th, you plan to release the results at the Expo Champ Farm Show on August 28th. But you're also going to have similar results from similar tours in Ontario and the U.S. as well. What can you tell us about that?
Well, like in previous years, Dave, we've always, when we presented the results, we always tried to get a very good perspective of what's happening outside the province with our neighbors in Ontario and also with our neighbors south of us in the U.S. To give a global North American perspective to the local farmers and industry players, where North American crops are at. So it adds complementary information, plus the results that we divulge on the results day. So it brings a more broader scope of information to our participants and partners.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the tour organizers, Jean-Philippe Boucher, speaking in Le Bulletin des Agricultures, described this growing season as everyone having had what he described as une saison particulière. For those of us outside the province, I was wondering if you could tell us a little more about the variations in weather that Quebec growers have seen this year from region to region, and a little more about what those might mean for corn and soy crops coming up to harvest.
Absolutely. Well, as we all know, no different than in Ontario, Quebec experienced a very cool and wet spring, thus causing delays in plantings for both corn and soybeans. Those delays would probably translate with the various variations from one region to another, anywhere from 10 to 15 days behind schedule on a normal planting season. I guess what we want to see is the variances from one region, for example, La Rive-Nord versus Le Centre du Québec and the greater Montérégie area. Some areas got in likely in a slightly delayed or timely fashion given than normal, whereas other areas where probably we saw heavier soils, more accumulation than normal, and with the cooler temperatures, we're not seeing the soils drying up as quickly. So we probably saw, you know, corn and soybeans get planted in not the ideal, but probably less than ideal conditions versus other regions that didn't see that type of condition. So yes, there's been a lot of variance from one region to the other. And I guess Jean-Philippe is right. It's going to be a very particular season this year for a lot of growers out there from one region to another. But I think generally speaking, we've come a long ways. Definitely summer months have been, we've had mostly ideal growing conditions with ample heat, timely rain showers. So the crops come along a long ways from where it was, even though it did go in late or later than usual, as we can say.
Mm-hmm. From what we've seen so far, where have growers been sort of the most fortunate? Which regions have been the most fortunate that way?
I would say the greater Montérégie, especially on the east, north, and probably center to south side, they've been ideal with the Centre Québec. The Rive Nord, depending on, you know, there's been some flash flooding very close, obviously, to the St. Lawrence River. But as you work your way into the mainland and onto the plateaus, they probably got in, in a very decent manner. I think the ones that did probably see some difficulty were mostly in the southwestern part of Quebec and along the Ontario border. So as you can see, there's a lot of variance. And even within the same regions I just named you, there's been pockets where, you know, like I said, heavier clay soils, more spotty accumulation. And with the lack of heat and dryness, it took a lot of time for that moisture to dissipate. So it's been very variable within the regions, even though some have been more fortunate than others. But there again, within the same region, you had pockets that did have some difficulty and got delayed further.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to the tour, is there still time for people to sign up to take part?
Absolutely. We invite people to communicate with us via email at info@grainwiz.com. That's the email. You can communicate with us by email, or you can visit the website, which is www.grainwiz.com/TGCQ, which brings you to the main page of La Tournée des Grandes Cultures du Québec 2019.
Perfect. Well, we'll certainly be watching to see how the results turn out this year. Mr. Minocchio, thank you very much for your time, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Dante Minocchio is a merchandising manager with Richardson International. For more information on La Tournée des Grandes Cultures, you can visit grainwiz.com. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. So if you're a farm news and weather junkie, you probably saw more than a few photos and videos this spring of what looked like devastation down in the U.S. heartland. Fields turned to sludge, roads washed out, planting being prevented to say the very least. All that, of course, has long since been built into the markets that guide the prices our grain growers get, but it didn't really make a mark on any of the official estimates from the USDA. That is until Monday this week, when its new World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, or WASD, report came out. But might be fair to say that report didn't follow trade expectations. Phil Franz Workington is here from Glacier Markets Farm to explain what the heck happened here. Phil, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So it's Tuesday afternoon as we record all this, and all is definitely not well so far this week in the Kingdom of King Corn. What happened yesterday?
Yeah, corn dropped limit down 25 cents lower yesterday and is down again today. More modest losses, but still on the chart. It's a sharp drop, 4-month lows now after just 2 days of trading. And yeah, that's all due to the USDA. They, like you said, it was a wet spring. Crops got in late. Everyone was, you know, things aren't going to get seeded. And then that was followed by heat and dryness, and that's going to cut into yields. And USDA came out and pegged, you know, they did lower the acres a bit, but not mm-hmm. as much as everyone had expected. And they surprised pretty much everyone by upping their yield estimates. So even with a bit smaller acreage base, they up their yields, and they're pegging soy or corn at 13.9 billion bushel crop at 169 and a half bushels per acre. So bigger than anyone expected corn crop is causing prices to fall. Whether or not that crop is what is actually harvested remains to be seen. And, you know, there'll be questions and a likely, bounce in prices if any weather issues show up, which is highly likely, because on top of it, with their big yield estimate, crops were seeded late, as we mentioned. So much like development is slow too. So there's much of the crop that you can't even put a number on because it hasn't really developed to the point where you could estimate it yet. So there's that kind of factor in the background as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did USDA have to say about wheat?
Yeah, wheat. They are predicting a larger world wheat crop on the year, 768 million tons worldwide. That's up like 38 million on the year. So it's a fair chunk of wheat, and that caused wheat prices to dip yesterday in the U.S. All the U.S. crop itself, it's also up a bit on the year at just under 2 billion bushels. But of the total, spring wheat, which we care about more in Canada, mm-hmm. that's expected to be down a bit on the year in the States, mainly due to a smaller acreage base. They kind of had the same issue with corn and wetness in their kind of spring wheat growing areas, not getting the crop in the ground. And so spring wheat production is forecast to be down a bit on the year. Durum especially down on the year, 26% production drop according to the USDA's forecast. So that's something to watch as far as Canadians are concerned on Durum front, if that could underpin our markets a bit, as that's one we're more, you know, it's more of a specialty market that we would play into more than the bigger wheat commodity stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in the States too, you've got this. There was sort of this springtime tug of war, but as far as for acres, it's generally seen to be between corn and soybeans.
Yeah.
You know, depending on the weather and whatnot, and how that was all shaping up this year. Now, what did USDA have to say about the soybean crop?
Yeah. So there's corn they seed first, and then if they can't get corn in, they'll plant more soybeans. So I guess soybean acres were down, revised a bit lower. So that was soybeans. They dropped yesterday because corn was down so much and everything. Corn pulled everything down. But today, Tuesday, soybeans are back up a bit because, yeah, the acres are a bit down. But, you know, they're kind of where people expected. But the acres soybean area is down. Production's going to be down on the year. So that's a bit supportive for beans. They still got their own problems with China, and that's kind of going back and forth. And today there was Tuesday a bit more optimism. Trump isn't going to impose tariffs on some Chinese goods as early as he thought he would. So that's nothing ever happens, but it's mm-hmm. just the talk of things happening are enough to make prices go one way or another. When something ever does actually happen, who knows what will happen from a price standpoint. But just the talk on China and beans is enough to kind of move prices around as well.
Now, is that what's pushing and pulling the canola values right now, or are there other factors having an effect on canola futures and canola prices?
Yeah, canola's it does have its own factors as well. The U.S., what happens in the U.S. and the bigger soybeans, corn, that will always have some pull on canola. But the today, as an example, Tuesday, soybeans were up, canola moved down, and soy oil was down in the States. So that's canola is used more for its oil than its meal. So if oil goes down, that generally weighs on canola as well. We've got our own weather issues at play here. The sentiment seems to be that, you know, there's dryness in some areas and there's been cooler temperatures, but overall, you know, the weighing everything out, maybe the crop will be decent, but, you know, despite, you know, problems in some areas and whatnot. So that's, so canola prices have come down. Fund traders are, they're bearish. They've got some big, short positions on canola so that their betting prices will go lower still. But yeah, it will generally depend on what happens elsewhere with canola being the follower. But there are, you know, if any weather issues Canadian specific prop up, that would be something to watch for that would give independent moves in the canola market. What happens with the Canadian dollar would also be something that could move things one way or the other.
Well, we'll keep watching the skies, and we can count on you and your crew to watch the markets, read the tea leaves and the presidential tweets, and as farmers head back out into the fields. Phil, thanks for your observations as always.
Thanks for having me.
Phil Franz Workington is a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm in Winnipeg, and he wraps up our show for today, but we'll be back in a week's time with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Thanks for listening to Between the Rows.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.